Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Save big money on your kitchen projects at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, get 15% off everything you can fit in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Due to the themes of this podcast, listener discretion is advised. Lock your doors, close the blinds, change your passwords. This is Secrets and Spies. Secrets and Spies is a podcast that dives into the world of espionage, terrorism, geopolitics, and intrigue. This podcast is produced and hosted by Chris Carr.
On today's podcast, I'm joined by journalist and author Jack Murphy, and we dive into the details of Operation Absolute Resolve. I hope you find this episode interesting. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Take care.
The opinions expressed by guests on Secrets and Spies do not necessarily represent those of the producers and sponsors of this podcast.
Jack Murphy, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for joining me, and also a fellow podcaster as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Before we kind of kick off, it's always nice to kind of get to know a little bit about who we're chatting with, and obviously you run this podcast, The Team House, and you've got a magazine, is it The High Side? So I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about that, really, and how you kind of got into that.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it was a very kind of windy road for me, but to make a long story short, I served in the Army for 8 years as in a couple special operations units. Deployed three times, got out in 2010, went to college, got a degree, and sort of stuck around the New York City area, and also got involved in a startup company while I was in college that did military news. And so that was kind of my first entryway into journalism. So I've always been kind of a digital, you know, web guy, a web-based journalist. And, you know, over the years, that's led into different things. The Team House podcast is, you know, where we interview a lot of special ops and intelligence community people. And that's sort of an outgrowth of the work I've done in journalism for the last 13, 14 years now. You know, you meet all of these interesting people in your travels. It's like, maybe we should, you know, tell your story. And then the High Side came about maybe 3 years ago. I was at an OSS Society dinner sitting next to Sean Naylor, who is, he literally wrote the book on JSOC, Relentless Strike. And he and I were both kind of like not totally satisfied with where we were at, I think, at that moment. Mm-hmm. And we both had stories that were on the back burner that we had been thinking about for a long time. And so we ended up thrown in together and started up the High Side. And you know, most of those stories that have been in the back of my mind are, we've now published. So it's a cool outlet. I think we publish a lot of stuff about the CIA, about the special operations, secret units, classified programs, a lot of like interesting stuff. I mean, it's fun for me. I mean, I'm writing exactly the type of stuff that I want to write, and I think Sean is too.
Fantastic. Thank you for that. And you have some amazing guests on your podcast, and obviously I guess you're able to sort of draw on them for your journalism and things. So well done. I mean, the Team House is fantastic, and I see you perform very well on YouTube as well.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, as you know, podcasting is kind of a harsh mistress. You roll with the punches. I mean, publishing in general is like that, you know, whether you're publishing books or journalism. It's a difficult industry, but again, I mean, I can't complain. I've been pretty lucky, I think.
Yeah, fantastic. I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about your military service, because am I right, you were in the Army Rangers, is that correct?
Yeah, I started off in 3rd Ranger Battalion, and then crossed over and went to Special Forces and served in 5th Special Forces Group. So that was kind of my time. And, you know, in Ranger Battalion, I started off as a recoilless rifle gunner, sniper, machine gun team leader, and then went to Special Forces, and I was the weapons sergeant on a free fall team. So I deployed twice to Iraq and once to Afghanistan. And I mean, nothing super, you know, anything. I didn't do anything that's going to knock anyone's socks off. I was just another soldier, really. But I'm proud of the time I spent in the military. I thought it was great, and I'm glad that I did it. And I'm also glad that I left when I did and pursued something else when I was ready.
Yeah. And do you find then that your background and your service kind of makes you then a little bit sort of, should we say, instinctively trust less some of the things that get reported about how these missions work?
Sometimes yes, and I mean sometimes also makes you more skeptical about what the military itself is saying. You kind of know where they tend to color outside the lines. So I mean, it definitely helps lend a little bit of insight. But I mean, at the same time, I've been out for a while now. I've been out of the military for like 15 years. So whatever I'm doing today, I mean, I think is strictly journalistic. I'm not really, you know, I'm not connected enough to the military. You know, that sort of access on that level expires. It does for anyone over time. So I'm at a point in life where I really have to cultivate actual sources and talk to people and get out there and put myself out there in that manner.
Thank you for sharing that. Today, we're going to talk a bit about what's known about Operation Absolute Resolve. How did you sort of begin reporting it? Because you had some really interesting details in your reporting on the High Line about what happened way before, some of the details were even out before, like the New York Times, etc.
Yeah. You know, I did a similar story about the JSOC spinning up in response to the October 7 crisis in Gaza. And their deployment to Cyprus and preparing to potentially rescue hostages. So the Gaza piece and the Maduro operation piece were relatively easy to report as these things go. you know, it, so I compare that, you know, there's other articles we wrote. We just wrote one about the CIA citing bin Laden potentially in 2005 in Pakistan.
That's a very interesting one, that one.
I had to sit on that story for like 10 years. I mean, you know, some of these stories take months and months and sometimes years to write. But this Maduro story, the one about Operation Absolute Resolve, relatively straightforward by comparison. I reached out to some folks that I know in those various communities and asked them, you know, what's going on, and got some, you know, within, you know, hours, really got some compelling information. I was like, well, this hasn't been reported yet. And again, it's also just the kind of, like I said, this job keeps you on your feet. I woke up that morning. If I don't know if anyone's interested in this, just a personal experience, but like I woke up that morning, the raid had happened about 4 a.m. I woke up around 8 on a Saturday and had a whole bunch of text messages from friends like, Jack, did you see blah, 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 blah? I'm like, what the hell's going on? And so I see, you know, this operation happened in Venezuela. So I started texting a bunch of people asking for more information. I went to the gym at 9, worked out, got back home at like 10:15, 10:20, and sat down and started writing this article. And I mean, that's how fast this stuff happens.
Yeah. And what was your sort of initial kind of reaction when you first sort of heard that this has happened? Because I've seen in the past you sort of talked a little bit about you have a sort of concern about sort of America's history of Iraq and things, and I was wondering if what your sort of thoughts were with this operation, because it's been sort of on the boil for a while.
My initial reaction, which I think probably many people have had, is okay, cool, you got them. Now what are you going to do? What's the follow-up? And, you know, so often the transition plan that the American government has for regime changes is basically, you know, it boils down to good luck, bro. Hope it all works out. And, you know, I saw, and so many other veterans saw, how that worked out in Afghanistan and Iraq and elsewhere. I mean, throughout history, more often than not, we don't do regime changes very well. We don't transition these countries very well. We don't police foreign populations very well. These are just things that we're not good at. It doesn't play into our national character very well. And there is an allergy, of course, to what's called nation building. But I mean, we're also in this very interesting time where, you know, America's role in the world is clearly changing. History is changing. You know, as much aversion as there is to nation building, I mean, President Trump stood up there at a press conference and said, we're going to run Venezuela now. And no one seemed to have any like huge problem with that. I mean, I'm sure there are objections, but, you know, you're not seeing like protests in the streets about it.
That's very true. I mean, because Trump's so famous for this sort of one and done philosophy and trying.
Yeah.
And he's somewhat allergic to nation building, as you talked about just now. So it is kind of surprising that now he's quote unquote running Venezuela.
I think my sense of it is that, you know, he is very much going around the world looking for easy wins, a little feather that he can put in his cap. And I think Venezuela is emblematic of that. I think it's almost a de facto acknowledgement that we can't resolve any of the major problems of our time, be it Iran, Gaza, Ukraine, South China Sea. I mean, pick one. Our options seem quite limited there. But what we can do is go mess with Venezuela. We can go mess with Denmark over Greenland. You know, it's these like smaller things that I think you're right that's what's in his mind, is like, hey, this is an easy win for us.
Yeah, yeah. And I get the feeling that a lot of people who sort of support him kind of like to see tangible action and results, and they seem a little bit allergic to the kind of minute details of things.
Yeah, I mean, we're Americans, and I mean, at the end of the day, we're between two oceans. You know, our neighbor to the north is pretty friendly. The neighbor to the south is kind of difficult, but not a national security threat. I mean, Fortress America kind of still is a thing. I mean, we're very naive about the rest of the world, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's move into the details of the operation itself. So you reported this operation sort of took months of preparation. From what you've learned, how far back did planning really go, and what were the roles of US agencies like the CIA and JSOC in Venezuela beforehand?
Yeah, so as far as I understand, the planning phase for this operation really picked up steam in September and October. Although I did have someone tell me that the CIA got people on the ground in August. Now there's some debate about, and I have to do some more reporting to fully understand it myself. This was done by the Special Activities Division, but I think that it probably had to be indigenous, you know, local assets that we had trained up offsite, people who are exiles or something like that, and then inserted them back into the country. You send a bunch of people that look like me into Venezuela to infiltrate clandestinely, like it's not going to go too well. So I think it probably was, you know, locals that they put into country. And there were a couple of other things during this time frame that kind of played into the planning process that really helped out. One of them was that over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, Maduro had really promoted his loyalists within the military. So it definitely wasn't a meritocracy. It was just purely nepotism. It's like, you like me, so I like you. I'm going to promote you up. And all the competent generals who actually knew their job were getting pretty angry about this. And that created openings, as I understand it. There were also a couple of defections. One of them was a guy that ran a state-run oil company. Another one was one of Venezuela's intel chiefs. And I can hazard a guess at who that actually was. You can find a guy that was extradited and offered testimony in the United States. I think probably he flipped completely. And those defections helped the CIA learn about which groups on the ground they could work with and make some of those local connections. And they did, from back then to when this operation took place, recruited a local source network and began using them to do things. And probably that's what that team that they put on the ground in August was probably a big part of that too, because what they did was they introduced pieces of technology into Venezuela that the local ground network was able to put into place, like beacons that could be used for bombing runs, electronic jammers, things like that, that were activated during the operation itself. And that sort of preparatory work, the acronym that it's sometimes known as, is operational preparation of the environment. You might also hear operational preparation of the battle space. And I think technically the term they use right now is intelligence preparation of the battle space. But needless to say, it's preparation for an upcoming operation.
Yeah. Do you think all of this sort of preparation and sort of groundwork that was laid really was intended to be a single operation? Or do you think there were intentions initially to do more? Obviously, now I think that's going to get harder the longer they leave that, if they were planning to do more.
So I guess I would preface this by saying that at a high level in the United States government, rightly or wrongly, this is seen more as a policy change than a regime change. Mm. So I don't think they ever had on the table, like, we're going to do like a full-blown, you know, 2003 Iraq regime change. But as I understand it, there were multiple phases of this plan that could be executed. And, you know, going in and grabbing Maduro was sort of phase one. And there is like a phase two, three, four, of things that can be executed if the government deteriorated, if things fell apart. During the press conference the day after the raid, President Trump seemed to confirm at least some of what I just said when he stated that there was a second wave. There's a much larger military second wave that could be sent into Venezuela if things didn't work out correctly during that operation, or if things deteriorate in the future, that they can go in. There are multiple phases that were planned and could potentially be executed.
It's interesting, there was some reporting about how the CIA concluded that it was better to let the kind of vice president take over than get the Venezuelan opposition leaders to come in.
Yeah, and I mean, this was definitely part of the game plan, that we're getting Maduro, but we're leaving the entire rest of the government, all the key leaders we're leaving in place. We didn't make moves to kill those people or grab them or otherwise have them ostracized or whatever the case may be. That was definitely part of the plan. And again, this is why it wasn't really seen at the top level necessarily as a regime change, but more of a policy change. And I think the thought was that they can get Maduro out of there and that will fundamentally change the political conditions in Venezuela. Now, whether or not that works remains to be seen, of course.
Of course. And does that make it on a legal ground in the United States easier for this operation to kind of kick off? Because I think it was under the auspices of being a law enforcement operation than a military operation.
Yeah, this is where it gets a little weird and a little opaque even for me. The operational preparation of the environment that we were just talking about, that was done, as I'm told, under the 2001 authorization for the use of military force, passed after 9/11. How the AUMF allows them to go into Venezuela and do that, I don't, you'll have to ask a lawyer. It doesn't make sense to me. The actual operation itself wasn't one of these traditional JSOC capture-kill missions or kill-capture in the case of bin Laden, right? We're going in there and we're going to take this guy out. It was more like JSOC was the escorts for American law enforcement. And on the assault force, there were two FBI agents who were there to actually serve an arrest warrant and place Maduro and his wife under arrest.
Did the FBI sort of have jurisdiction for that? Because I was reading a book recently about the U.S. Marshals and how they tend to be more involved in those kind of things or expected to.
Yeah, I mean, the FBI has had a role in this. I mean, even prior to 9/11, the FBI was doing what would be called renditions, going overseas and making arrests. Another even clearer precedent would be in Libya about 10 years ago now, that Delta Force did a couple raids in Libya, arresting some terrorists who were involved in Benghazi. And the FBI hostage rescue team guys were all on the ride for that for the same reason, so that they could slap the guys in handcuffs and you're maintaining that chain of custody and everything else that the U.S. legal system requires.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for that. So can you walk us through sort of what we now know about the raid itself from insertion to exfiltration?
They launched off of the USS Iwo Jima, which is not an aircraft carrier, but you can launch rotary wing aircraft off of it. It was a couple Little Birds, I think 9 Black Hawks, and a couple Chinook helicopters. So this is sort of a standard aviation package flown by the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment, the Night Stalkers. And the assault team consisted of Rangers from 3rd Ranger Battalion and Delta Force operators from C Squadron. They flew in at 1:01 local time, 1:01 a.m., used terrain masking, staying low to the ground and hiding behind a terrain feature to avoid enemy radar systems. And they used that to close the distance and achieve tactical surprise. And as they came over that last terrain feature, they assessed that, yes, we still have the element of surprise. The Venezuelans don't know we're coming. And a couple of things happened at that time. The lights went out in part of Caracas, which is interesting. The electricity cut out. And again, President Trump said himself in the press conference, he said, yeah, we did that using an expertise that we have. And that's very similar. The same thing happened in Abbottabad, Pakistan, when they went to get bin Laden, was the lights blinked out in town. Aircraft, there was some 150 aircraft in the air for this operation. And they began suppressing some of the air defense sites, doing airstrikes to create sort of a corridor for the helicopters to come in. I'm also told that we took control of the Venezuelan military communication system, that we basically shut down their comms. So a bunch of different things kind of happening at the same time across apparently cyberspace, the electronic warfare spectrum, and then, you know, the actual kinetic military space as well. The assault team came in and hit the, you know, presidential compound, quickly isolated the target, and the assaulters moved in. What we know now is that during this operation, there were somewhere between 70 to 80 enemy KIA. I should also point out, two civilians were killed during this operation. My understanding was we blew up one of the Venezuelan military's radio antennas, and when it collapsed, it fell over on like a house or a shanty that a couple people were living in. So unfortunately, two cases of collateral damage. But we know that a bunch of Venezuelan troops were killed, and the Cuban military itself is claiming that 32 of their officers were killed on this target, which raises all sorts of questions, like, why are the Cubans there?
Mm-hmm.
Can Maduro mm-hmm. not trust his own countrymen to be his bodyguards? What are we doing here? So the Delta Force operators, apparently they caught Maduro as he was trying to lock himself in a panic room. He was trying to shut the door when they grabbed him. And at that point, him and his wife both surrendered. The FBI placed them under arrest. And now they were, calling for Exfield to get off of target. There's also these reports that have come out in the last like 48 hours that some sort of sonic weapon was used, that the people on the ground were, bleeding out of their eyes and ears and this sort of stuff. I can tell you that's not true. There wasn't any novel exotic weapon used. That wasn't the case. And we wouldn't, there are real systems that exist. Some of them are non-classified, directed energy weapons, but they weren't used on this operation, and they don't really work the way that were described in that account anyway. One of the aircraft took fire, but remained flyable throughout the operation. And on the way out, they fired defensively, we're told. They took some fire coming off target, and so suppressed those targets. And then they got back out over international waters, I believe, at 3:30 a.m. So the operation, 2.5 hours or so. They were probably, I would guess, and this is just, I don't know the minute by minute breakdown, but I would see in my mind's eye, they were probably on the ground for about an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes.
Wow.
They landed back on the Iwo Jima, and the FBI transferred Maduro from their custody to the DEA's custody. So I believe the rationale probably for that is that the FBI HRT has a pretty long relationship with Delta, and that's probably why they were the law enforcement officers on that mission. Going way back in time, when I was in Iraq 20 years ago, we had HRT guys out on targets with us, the FBI HRT guys. So the relationship between them and the special ops community goes back a ways. However, the indictment that the United States has out on Maduro is largely involving drug-related charges. So it makes sense that he was transferred to the DEA's custody. It's also told that Maduro has been videotaped almost constantly since he was captured. The purpose behind that is to head off any allegations in the future, whether it comes out in the media or Maduro's lawyers in the future try to claim that he was tortured. So they're keeping him recorded. And there are some like other things that, they're kind of treating him like he's a de facto head of state in a sense. They didn't put him in an orange jumpsuit and perp walk him. They didn't fly him in one of the Gulf Streams that they fly, drug cartel guys in. They used, what is it? 557. I can't remember the exact aircraft, but it's the type of aircraft that flies the vice president and the secretary of state.
Oh yeah. 757, I think.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so they're even though we see him as a illegitimate president, they are kind of treating him as if he's a de facto leader. And I guess the next thing is that since they've had him in custody right here in Brooklyn, ironically, they are trying to get his wife, Cecilia, to flip. They're trying to get her to become the key witness against Maduro, which as far as I know, she would have to waive spousal privilege. You can't really compel a spouse to testify against their spouse because of, it's just legally, it's just considered the relationship is too strong. You can't really do that. But she could waive that right if she wanted to. We'll see what happens there. Did you see the article about the judge that's presiding over the case?
Oh, I've not seen this one. No. What was the deal with that?
He's a 92-year-old Jewish guy from the Bronx.
Wow.
Been on the bench forever. doesn't care what anyone thinks about him at all. Yeah, it's an interesting guy. I don't think he puts up with any BS in his courtroom. So it'll be very interesting to see how this trial progresses.
It'll make the Netflix miniseries about it much better, I think.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see, kind of how it goes on, because if you read the indictment, it's kind of a joke. It almost reads like something that like a college kid put together in his dorm room over a weekend. It's like, how is this illegal? I'm not a lawyer, but I'm told by lawyers that it's basically a boilerplate drug conspiracy indictment. And they're going to have to present a lot more at trial to get a conviction.
I mean, this would be hugely embarrassing if the case collapsed. I mean, I don't know what happens after that.
Yeah, what do? Do you bring them back? Do you send them back to Venezuela? How does that work?
Yeah. No, it's crazy. It's crazy. Back on the mission. I mean, the mission itself was from a military perspective, I think it was very impressive and very well executed. Yeah. But there were some things where it could have gone horrendously wrong. Like you mentioned earlier, the helicopter took fire, and you were just describing how Maduro ended up in this panic room. I wonder if he'd managed to close the door, whether that would have delayed things even longer, because an hour on the ground, which is what it sounds like the troops were there for, is a long time.
Yeah, they would have explosively breached the door. And that's something else I should have mentioned earlier, is that the CIA recruited an asset very close to Maduro, who was able to provide almost real-time updates about his location and what he was doing, his movements, etc. When the chairman of the Joint Chiefs stood up and said, we were monitoring where he lived, where he went, even what his pets were, that was probably pretty accurate. So we knew that he had some sort of panic room, and they were definitely prepared to breach it if need be. But to your point, yes, this was a professionally executed operation. The guys deserve credit for all the hard work that goes into something like this. However, from a policy side and from big picture in the United States, there's a very like real danger that you're learning some false lessons, that you're thinking that this is an easy button, that you can just smash the JSOC button anytime you have a foreign policy conundrum, rather than kind of showing some patience and dealing with problems through diplomacy. Might take decades, it is what it is, that our leadership in America believes that they can just smash the easy button and send troops in and resolve any problem. And this operation went smoothly and appears to confirm that, yes, you can press the easy button. However, there are things that could have gone very wrong in this operation. And a simple, professional, bold operation could have been talked about very differently right now if you had a helicopter shot down, if you had a couple helicopters collide in midair, you had some operators killed on target. Those are the risks, and the soldiers involved understand the risks, but I'm not sure that the American public really does. Even today, I don't think they really get it. And they don't understand that how our actions are perceived overseas. I think many Americans think that special operations raids and airstrikes are not war. For some reason, it doesn't really click. They don't see it as war. And they've also been, we all have been kind of inoculated to it since 2001, that this is just sort of the ordinary state of affairs. So I think you do have to be very cautious about how you use these capabilities and be careful that you don't get obsessed with them or think that it's just the easy mode that you can go to every time you run into a problem.
Yeah. Looking at that bigger picture, thinking on it, I mean, how I don't know about you, but I've been a bit disappointed by some of the commentary, because a lot of people seem to be very besotted by the mission itself but not very interested in that bigger picture and how it's being perceived abroad, especially by America's allies. I don't know how you feel about some of that.
Well, again, I mean, there's a certain amount of hubris that comes with being a superpower, being where we're located on the map, being isolated from some of these international problems in many ways. I think from an American point of view, the costs are little to nothing. Mm. And that's kind of concerning. I mean, I think even the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere, Somalia, Yemen, any of the other places we go, Libya, the costs to the average American are fairly low. We haven't seen any like significant anti-war movement in the country, nothing like the Vietnam era protests. And I think that's kind of the scary thing for me is that we can keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. Whereas if you're a foreign country, you have hostile neighbors on your borders, you can't keep making the same mistakes because you won't exist, right? So every decision, every political decision carries such immense weight in some of these, you know, beleaguered countries around the world. And Americans just don't feel that. They don't feel that sort of pressure, that lack of security. They don't feel that. And I think that's what leads us to making some of the decisions that we make.
Yeah, indeed. And funny you should mention that, because being in the UK, obviously close proximity to Europe, and in the last few years, there's this sort of growing concern. I mean, I don't think it will happen, touch wood, but this growing concern of an open conflict with Russia. And even I'm starting to feel it a little bit now. I'm like, oh my God, could this happen? You know, and there's a certain insecurity now behind me, at least, you know, that I can feel. Whilst, as you're saying, many Americans probably don't experience that.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys have that history, right? You had the, you know, Germans bombing London. America hasn't really had that experience other than Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, indeed. Well, actually, there was a pier in Santa Barbara, I think, got bombed once. But
yeah, I mean, we also fought the Japanese on the Aleutian Islands off the coast of Alaska. So there's that, I guess.
But people don't take that into account, I guess. But yeah, yes, and true. Well, coming back to the mission itself for a moment, you mentioned earlier about how Maduro had Cuban bodyguards, and I find that really interesting.
Right.
And also, the way it's reported, but I don't know how true this is, it appears to be a bit of a lack of resistance from Venezuelan forces. And in the build-up to this raid, there was even talk of, like, senior Russian generals in Venezuela with like amazing anti-aircraft systems, etc. And it just militarily seemed like it was a very smooth operation, and there was very little actual pushback to American forces. I don't know what your thoughts are on all
well,
of that.
I mean, I think we've all seen what the worth of Russian anti-aircraft systems are at this point.
Except for people keep buying them.
Yeah, they don't perform as advertised. No. Not against American aircraft, at least, or any Western aircraft, for that matter. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting. Whenever we talk about some of these authoritarian regimes in the Southern Cone, Central and South America, the United States intelligence community is always looking at some sort of a Cuban nexus, because the Cubans have this historical role of pushing outwards. They did this during the Cold War into Honduras, into Nicaragua, into the Congo, Angola, etc. There's a whole long history there of the Cubans trying to export the revolution. Mm. And some of those relationships continued after the Cold War, including a relationship with Venezuela. But at the same time, American intelligence analysts have sometimes looked for this sort of Cuban nexus in different types of narco-terrorism and so on around Central and South America. And a lot of times they can't find it. It just doesn't exist. There isn't one there. But this is a case where, lo and behold, there very clearly was a Cuban nexus on this target. The Cuban government saying themselves that these were our guys, and here's their pictures of all the people you killed. And it's like, well, that's very interesting, Cuba. Thank you. Why were your guys there protecting the president of Venezuela? So it brings up all kinds of interesting questions.
Yeah, indeed. Have you ever watched the cartoon Archer? Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
When I heard about the Cuban bodyguards, I was instantly thinking of like the Cuban hit squads in that cartoon. That's what I was sort of picturing in my head. But
the Cuban intelligence service, DGI, is formidable.
Mm. Yeah, they're supposed to be top tier, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to CIA guys that have been run against them and who have had DGI running against them. And they're nasty, man. They'll put teams of psychologists on you and figure out how to break you.
Wow. Yeah. I think I was talking to Vince Houghton about this a long time ago, and he was saying because they're almost purely focused on targeting America, that it makes them very good at what they do.
Yeah, they are too. They get ideological recruitments too, which is interesting.
Let's take a break and be right back with more.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
How strategically important is Venezuela to the United States today, especially in terms of sort of energy, geography, regional stability, and the great power competition? Because obviously Venezuela hosts China, Russia, Iran, and Cuba, right, as we've just discussed. So, yeah.
Yeah, so you can look at where Venezuela is located on the map and see that, you know, it has strategic importance. You make the argument that any country has strategic importance because of where it's located and how it helps you get into the region. But I think when we talk about its relevance on the world stage, we have to talk about the oil. I believe 80% of Venezuela's oil is going to China. That's a huge thing. And then the Chinese have probably the most to lose here. It's interesting that the day that Maduro was captured, he was meeting with a Chinese delegation. The American intelligence community had to monitor that delegation very closely to make sure they cleared out. We were not going to hit that target while the Chinese were there. We're not going down that road. So there's definitely a connection there. And as I said, the Chinese government maybe has the most to lose out of all of this.
Yeah, indeed. And because there's obviously this whole oil thing in Europe, we're sort of blaming, you know, we're saying this operation is all about the oil. But then is it Exxon just last week was saying that there's an awful lot of investment required before they even be able to kind of use any oil from Venezuela. It's not a simple thing, is it?
It's very kind of wild. I mean, again, Trump said during the press conference, like, we're going to get the oil. We're going to run Venezuela. We got to get that oil. I mean, there's no pretense, you know, they're not hiding it, you know. But then the oil industry, you know, they're not going to invest tens of billions of dollars getting all of the infrastructure in place in Venezuela to start pumping oil when that country could disintegrate at any moment. They have to make business decisions. And it's kind of ironic that, you know, President Trump, the let's make a deal guy, doesn't understand the business decisions that go into that. So it's kind of interesting to see that press conference the other day where oil executives are sort of like, I don't know about all this.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, especially when he read out the note handed to him by Marco Rubio as well. That was quite special, that moment. But there we go. I mean, there's a lot of people at the moment trying to sort of decide what this operation was really about. And, you know, was it really about anti-narcotic operations? Was it about oil? Was it about unseating kind of China, Russia, and Iran's influence in Venezuela? What do you think it was really the objective actually was in the end?
I think for President Trump, it was the oil. I think for Marco Rubio, it's ideological. I think for him, it was more about removing a authoritarian leftist regime in South America. And he sees this as a template that can now be applied to Havana.
Yeah.
Again, that's the danger of getting obsessed with some of these special operations capabilities. For the soldiers, I think it is just, you know, a basic, you know, capture operation. It's, you know, here's one of America's enemies. Let's go slap handcuffs on him and haul him off. They were given a job and they went and did it, right?
Yeah, and they did it very well. So it's, So you mentioned a little bit online about that there's some hints that Cuba could be next. Do you think that that's likely? I mean, obviously now there's talk about Greenland as well, but what do you think we might expect? And actually even Mexico's come up as well. I mean, do you think over the next few months we might start seeing operations in other countries similar to this?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have like, what, 3 more years left of this administration? There's plenty of time for them to, you know, especially if it's in response to things that are happening domestically and they're looking to achieve something using the military. I definitely expect them to start messing with Cuba over the next couple of years. Mexico is a possibility. That's sort of a different can of worms too. The Mexican government is very, I mean, this entire region is, but the Mexican government in particular is very sensitive about colonialism, about, you know, the gringos, the Yankees coming down and messing with their affairs. We do have a relationship with the Mexicans where we can train their special ops guys and we can send intelligence people down there to help them do their job. But the Mexicans and even the Colombians, it's more like, we just need your help. We don't want you to do it for us. So us going in there unilaterally crushes a lot of relationships. And I think the same thing with Petro in Colombia, who's also apparently has a target on his back right now. You know, going in there unilaterally and smashing things up is basically throwing away a relationship that, in the case of Colombia, goes back to the Korean War between our militaries. I don't think it's a very wise thing to do, but I mean, I can't predict what this administration's going to do either.
No, I don't think anybody can at the moment, even the administration itself.
yeah, exactly.
You know, especially, was it Tulsi Gabbard, who apparently has not been invited to any of the briefings about this operation? Somebody was joking to say DNI means do not invite. I mean, that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, strange stuff. But so taking a step back from obviously the tactical success, do you think the US government should have done this? And, you know, how do we weigh the kind of legal, moral, and strategic argument for this operation?
Well, I mean, whether or not we should have done it is going to depend on how history pans out. There's a lot of ifs. If it helps Venezuela transition to democracy, if they hold free elections and the Venezuelan people are able to choose new leadership, then I think we would all probably say, yes, this operation was a good thing and it helped people choose democracy. If Venezuela slides further into chaos and corruption, that opens up, you know, when you have a kind of a lawless area, that opens up the door to more narcotics trafficking, narco-terrorism, even just traditional terrorism in general. You know, when you create a lawless space where terrorists can conduct financing and set up training camps and all that kind of stuff. I mean, if that happens, if Venezuela turns into like a sort of Afghanistan of South America, then obviously this operation was a huge blunder for us to make. I think it remains to be seen. But I would certainly encourage people to be cautious again about how we use these capabilities. And if nothing else, I mean, at least consider, what are the repercussions when, a helicopter goes down and 17 soldiers are killed.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And do you think this operation has actually made the US safer, especially in terms of sort of drugs, regional threats, or deterrence? And is there a potential for sort of any blowback from this operation?
It's kind of hard to see how it makes America safer. Most of the drug smuggling, as I understand it, from Venezuela was actually going to Europe. It wasn't coming to the United States. I understand Maduro is kind of like or was a thorn in our side, but is removing him necessarily a pro-America action? Is it making us safer and stronger? It's a tough case to make. I mean, there's a lot of bad people around the world that probably would deserve a JSOC raid.
Putin being one of them, but
yeah, Putin, the Kim family regime in North Korea. I mean, there's a lot of bad people out there, but sending troops in isn't always the wisest option.
Yes, yeah, you'd need a lot of them if you're going to start doing that. Oh my goodness. And what do you think the impact has been on America's allies with all of this? Because I'm certainly at the moment, especially with the now talk about Greenland, etc., there's a lot of uncertainty again about sort of the future of NATO and things.
Yeah, I think you're right there that I think Venezuela is like relatively low cost for the United States as far as international fallout. I mean, yeah, the UN's going to condemn you. They're going to condemn you anyway, whatever. But yeah, the issue with Greenland and Denmark is much bigger. When Denmark is like openly saying like, we will fire on Americans if you come here. We will invoke Article 5, our collective security agreement to defend against America. That's unprecedented. That's crazy. Like, let's just call it what it is. That's crazy. And that the United States is kind of hard at work dismantling a post-World War II security arrangement. It's our most successful security arrangement, our most successful security treaty. And it's a system that we built, and now we see ourselves as victims of that system and are trying to dismantle it. And really the irony of it is that it's over Greenland. The idea that the Chinese or the Russians are going to invade Greenland is asinine. It's absolutely idiotic. The Russians can't even invade Ukraine. I mean, let's be realistic here. I mean, they're trapped in a quagmire in Eastern Europe that they can't escape. They're not doing some massive landing operation in Greenland, and neither are the Chinese. Can they even fight outside of the South China Sea? How in the world are they getting to Greenland? No one talks about this stuff for some reason.
Yeah.
Now, the Greenland, of course, controlled by the Danes, and we can negotiate with the Danish. The Danish actually, they want us to like them. They want to have a partnership with us, and we already do. We have a military base on Greenland. We have radar stations and all sorts of stuff. If we want more radar stations, if we want more military bases on Greenland, we can negotiate that with the Danes. We can have a conversation with them and work that out. All this talk about invading Greenland or annexing it is just pure bluster. It's basically foreign policy becoming internet trolling. And this is the problem with an administration that's primary concern is generating social media content as opposed to running the government or having a foreign policy, because the foreign policy we have right now is just incoherent. It like just fundamentally doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And there was a lot of talk last weekend about the axis of influence. And I just feel like at the moment, this current administration probably doesn't have the capability to actually adhere to that. But what do you think about the kind of motivations are for potentially annexing Greenland, etc.?
Well, again, I think the motivation is part of it is they see, well, that could be a feather in our cap that, hey, we just expanded America. Same thing with these games they're playing with Canada. Strategically, I mean, does Greenland matter? Yes, it does. It's potentially a staging ground between the Atlantic Ocean. So it does rest in a strategic area. but does it make sense for us to annex it? No, not really. And the reality also is that you're never going to have large troop formations fighting in the Arctic. It's just too hard to fight up there. It happens in limited ways. I mentioned us fighting in the Aleutian Islands. During World War II, there was fights above the Arctic Circle, the Finnish Winter War. But you're never going to see like battalions of infantry or mechanized troops moving around the Arctic Circle in Alaska or Canada or Greenland fighting, because it's just too resource intensive to keep soldiers up there. The environment is just so unforgiving. It's just kind of a non-starter. So you'll see other things happening in the Arctic. You know, there's like radar stations, early warning systems, different kinds of reconnaissance taking place, but there's not going to be some big slugfest in the Arctic. It's not going to happen like that.
No. What should listeners, do you think, be kind of watching out for in the coming weeks that would be a tell as to whether Venezuela was a one and done, or we might see Cuba next, or Greenland, etc.?
I think, you know, the thing that this administration doesn't like really do pure like secrecy, covert operations, I don't think. It kind of telegraphs. They do say what where they're going and what they want to do. Again, they're not really hiding it. I think right now the place to look is Iran, that you're having the Iranian people out on the streets, and they're frustrated with their government, understandably, and holding demonstrations. And there's a real possibility that, you know, the regime in Iran could fall. Does it just need a little extra push from Uncle Sam? And I think if that's the case, I think that would be very tempting to President Trump to, again, chalk up in his mind an easy win. That, hey, we go and do this limited bombing campaign in Iran, take out some key leaders, and the Iranian people will do the rest. I would watch for that in the next couple months.
Yeah, on paper, the Iranian regime seems to be really degraded, partly by the actions of Israel, etc. And you know, I think what you're saying does ring true. It feels like if you were going to do it, now's kind of the time to attempt it.
Right.
Which is worrying in many respects. So, yeah. Especially when the son of the Shah of Iran is now talking about potentially forming an interim government, et cetera. I find that really fascinating.
I mean, there are already like massive blunders happening. Like the people of Iran don't really want Pahlavi back. They're not interested in having the Shah back. I don't think that's where we're going here. the days of kings and queens have sort of passed, right?
We hope.
Yeah.
Well, just before we sort of wrap up, is there anything else that's important to you today that we haven't touched upon that you think people should sort of understand about all of this?
Yeah, just keep in mind one strategic gambit leads into the next, so it's not over yet.
No, indeed. Well, Jack, thank you so much for joining me today. I really enjoyed our chat. It feels like it's gone really quickly, actually. It's sort of like, gone in a few seconds. But where can listeners sort of find out more about you, your work, and your podcasts as well?
Yeah. So our work on the High Side, you can just Google that, or you can type in www.thehighside.substack.com. The Team House podcast, you can find on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you go for that stuff. Those are the main places.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm glad we managed to do this.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
For listening. This is Secrets and Spies.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at cargurus.com. Go to cargurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CARGURUS.com. Cargurus.com.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.